Welcome back to Dear Queer. This is part two of our attachment theory series. So if you're just joining us, we recommend you start with last week's episode first.
Also, we had a bit of a recording issue this week, so our apologies in advance for Dylan's audio. Shall we do some questions?
Yeah, let's do some.
Hi, she, her from Toronto here. I am an unabashed PDA person. I love being able to hold my girlfriend's hand in public. Those little displays of affection are so important to me in and out of the home. Trouble is, I'm pretty sure my new crush has a dismissive, avoidant attachment style. How do I get what I need without pushing her away?
So, let's see.
Did you catch all that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I guess it also depends on if she... That sounds like obviously a conversation that needs to be had because mm-hmm. it's not really confirmed what the style is. And not that you want to open with like, I am sensing that your style is this. It could just be a conversation around like, hey, like where you put your needs first.
Yeah.
In a way, in the sense of being like, this would really give me... Like I tend to like showing my affection in public and... I just know that about myself and it's important to me and I'm curious, you know, how comfortable you are with all that. And then that just gives them the opportunity to voice that and maybe they are comfortable, maybe they're not, maybe they're working on it mm-hmm. and they just would like to know that. And maybe that's something, I mean, that's something that you should know if they are working on it because then you can kind of let them lead in some ways or you know, before you go out, be mm-hmm. like, I'd love to hold your hand for a little bit tonight. Is that going to work?
And plant you know, the seeds.
Yeah, plant the seeds and then also reinforce if it does happen and be like, I really love that. And yeah.
Because I guess if someone is dismissive and avoidant, I'm sure this person's fear is that they don't want to suffocate them, that kind of thing. So I think giving the heads up and that type of stuff and showing what's important, it's good. Mm-hmm. But also I think maybe just patience, it might take them a little longer. Yeah. I think it takes the dismissives a little bit longer to, but then, you know, maybe once you're in, then you're really in.
Absolutely.
So you become a safe space for the other person by
talking
about it. Well, all right. I love it. Let's keep going. In dating, I always find myself drawn to someone who projects a lot of independence. The same feelings of coolness I'm drawn to usually are the things that bring up my own insecurities. And need for assurance from my partner. How do I get out of this cycle?
It's just so funny that we often select the thing we're the most afraid of, right? That's like that, like, ooh, I love how independent they are. And then when you're with them, you're like, they don't need me. Why don't they?
Why are they so cool?
Yeah. And why are they just like, they're just cool doing that on their own. And like, I'd love to do that with them. And
yeah.
I'm always saying like, it's just like so allure. Funny. It is the allure. And it's like, you're choosing the thing that gives you the most insecurities mm-hmm. in a way.
Because you need to heal it.
Yeah, you need to. That's the thing, you need to heal it. So, I mean, hopefully it should be an opportunity for you to say, going into it, like, they don't need to spend all their time with me. I don't need to spend all my time with them. Mm-hmm. They're an independent person. Just because they're out there doesn't mean they're not thinking about me or spending time with me, like, quality time with me. And, like, you just can't let it reinforce whatever, you know, wrong narrative you're bringing into it.
Also, hot take, like, the cool ones, the people who appear the coolest, come on.
Oh man, I'm gonna keep my mouth shut on that one.
Wait, are you saying I'm very cool looking and so then I'm not cool?
I'm saying I've been there.
That's too funny. We should go back to Dylan and see what he thinks.
Let's do it.
Dylan, why do we always go back to the same types of attached folks time after time, even if we get burned?
Why do we do that? Maybe we know that we need something.
We're hoping to get it this time.
Yeah, I mean, it can be like this kind of quest that carries over from childhood to like finally secure this love. You know, this person or the kind of archetype of a person that comes from your developmental experiences. see that person, it's like that hope and that desire for something different gets activated, and that can be a really powerful and persuasive thing. So it's another great example of how, like, you know, particular people in our present will activate particular attachment dynamics that happen with people in our past.
Mm-hmm. And we feel like, to some degree, where it feels more valuable because it's been unattainable in the past. So it's like, feels like if you can get that, then you will finally prove that you are lovable, or that you are, you know, it'll validate that. It'll try and fill that gap that you've been kind of working under. But obviously, we know that's not the best way to go about it. Thank you so much, Dylan.
Dear Queer.
Okay, you are cruising through my questions. Hi, Dear Queer. I find my insecurities become heightened when I get into a new relationship. I really want to find someone to connect with and build a long-term partnership. But usually after we've gone past a few initial dates and things start to get more serious, my fears that they will leave or I'll get hurt creep in. So much so that I usually end up pushing them away or turning them off with my constant need for assurances.
Okay.
Okay, wait. First off, what do you think this person's attachment style is?
I mean,
is?
That sounds like the disorganized, anxiously, well, preoccupied, but also dismissive. So that's disorganized, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then who do you think they're dating?
Oh, they're dating. How did they describe them again?
I don't know that they said. No, they were more talking just about themselves.
Yeah. So yeah. It seems like they've got a bit of a disorganized thing where, like, at a certain point, their own avoidance kicks in because of their anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So how do we break this cycle?
Oh, well, this, again, I think, I mean, it all comes down to the story we tell ourselves. So there's anxiety they have to work through in terms of their own fear of abandonment, and to try to at least give it a chance and trust that they won't be abandoned, and just to, like, try and be secure in that and not repeat that story. Maybe they need to tell their partner. I mean, it sounds like they need assurances. I'm wondering if they're telling their partner that they need that.
Yeah.
Which is a conversation that needs to be had. Otherwise, this person is just going to live in anxiety over it and what they need and not have their needs met.
Yeah, I always think it's good to give your partner the playbook of what works well for you and what you need. I think it's kind of like what we talked about with like mismatched love languages or things like that. And it's, you know, you may default to giving something, but maybe that doesn't mean you can't.
Yeah, and we're not mind readers.
It truly.
Right? Like, as much as we passively aggressively imply what we want and we need, it's not transparent at all. We need to verbalize it. We need to say it.
Oh my gosh. And I think too, as I'm going to make this a queer thing, but, like, as queers, we're just like, there's just so many more emotions and sensitivities. At least that's my read. And it's like the amount of times that I could probably avoid getting like a misunderstanding or something is, like, if I just communicated, or if, like, Dev just asked me what I was thinking, because we're just telling ourselves our own stories.
Yes, exactly. And the two are not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess if they are feeling, did they say they pushed them away a little bit?
Yeah. Well, pushing them away through their constant need for assurance.
Oh, right. Okay.
Like, it's turning, it's a turn off,
much.
I think,
or yeah,
it's
yeah,
too
yeah.
much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, there's something, self-soothe, there's something to that, because, like, bringing it back to our last episode on reality television, Chelsea is a perfect example of this.
Let's go.
With, I want to say Jimmy, but it was Jimmy or Johnny, and she just constantly was insecure and will tell, like even the first time, the first days that they met, she constantly was like, so what did you think when you saw me? And, like, are you happy? Like, right now, are you happy right now? And, like,
yeah.
And they just always had the same argument based on her own insecurities. So at a certain point, it's not another person's responsibility to do all that.
Right.
You have to do some of it yourself, at least I think. Like,
yeah.
You can't put it all on the other person. It's your job.
Well, and if you keep entering in relationships thinking that you're going to heal things, and, like,
right.
It's like, okay, if this is a pattern, you are the constant.
Yes.
Tough love here. You are the constant. Maybe you also need to do some work outside the relationship.
Yeah.
Though I do think relationships can be, especially good relationships, can be a time when, yeah, really healing, but also a time when things like bubble up even more.
Oh, absolutely. You can only heal yourself on your own so much.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's once you're in relationship with someone else that those things get triggered that like maybe you didn't think were there anymore or you thought that were healed. And it can be within a relationship. Like if you're both gracious with each other, willing to be vulnerable and share those wounds, and then you can truly help undo that narrative for another person, because by not confirming it, but actually like
Brooklyn just told me she needed a belly rub.
Yeah, cute. But do you know what I mean? It can actually be a healing thing. As long as if you're willing to be open about those things and vulnerable, and the other person is, and you're willing to extend a bit of grace to each other and really let them know that like you like or love that unhealed person. Yeah. You're not looking for perfection. You're looking for like the wounds to match, or at least for someone who can honor where you're at and where you're coming from.
Yeah. I mean, if you are in a long-term relationship, you are going to love so many different versions of each other. And I think having a baseline of like, okay, we want the best for each other there, and giving each other the benefit of the doubt, I think that can carry you a long way. Or at least that's my hope.
Mm-hmm.
Another listener question here. I'm someone who came out at age 28. Prior to that, I had no healthy outlet for my crushes, no queer community. I think I am emotionally delayed and stuck in a pattern of wanting those who are unavailable. I'd like to get unstuck.
Same. No, not totally, but I really feel this question. Because there is a feeling of being kind of behind if you feel like you've discovered this about yourself later, and then you're thrown into a different set of kind of dating dynamics. It's like a whole new world, dating in the queer world compared to what you're used to, and it does trigger things that you didn't even know were there, right? So they might feel a little stunted, whether or not they are, like, but we all kind of are in a way. Like, unless you're perfectly secure and healed, and like, which I don't even know if that's possible. Even if you're like, unless you've always been secure and you just are secure, like unflailingly, you know, but there's going to be things that pull you back into insecurities or pull you back into wounds that like you might not even anticipate. And I think the fact that they even recognize that they're seeking out emotionally unavailable people is a huge thing, because now they can, like, they're going to start having a list of signs that are like, okay, last person that I dated, these were some of the things they did. And you're kind of going to develop a little radar for it to recognize it in the future, which is a good thing.
This person is definitely on the path. You're so right with that. It's like, recognizing step one. Also, though, I think it's like a bit of a case of just being gentle with yourself.
Yeah.
It's okay to take your time with it. Wanting those who are unavailable and wanting to get unstuck. So, you know, a couple things they could do is, if you're on a dating app, be very clear about what you are looking for.
Yes.
I think the more clear and articulate you can be about that, you will attract similar in. If your profile, for example, is kind of wishy-washy or looking for casual, that's what you're gonna bring in.
Yeah.
And so I just think getting clear with yourself, being patient, and that kind of thing.
And also recognizing, like, do you like the person, or do you like that they're unattainable?
Great point.
And so then they're gonna see, and then vice versa, if there's someone who's available and they're like, meh. Maybe they should give it a second look and be like, okay, but they are, like, there's a lot of green flags there, and I should give it a chance and see what happens there.
There's a lid for every pot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This has been like a good kind of, I don't know, attachment style boot camp overview.
Yeah.
If people like this episode, maybe we can get into more specifics and details. But we've got a lot coming up.
Dear Queer.
This has been another episode of Dear Queer. Just a reminder, we are not actually experts. Any advice given should actually come from our experts, who we will bring in from time to time. Music brought to you by Sean Patrick Brennan, produced by myself, Lauren Hogarth, and your host, as always, Elena Papianis.
I'm getting that.